I'll tell you something funny about this collection. The first title was Too Jewish.
Oh my goodness, really?
Don't you think the stories are really too Jewish?
Shalom. Welcome to the Too Jewish radio show and podcast with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, Rabbi's guest is Matt Whitaker, director of the powerful new film, Truth and Treason, out in theaters now. And we'll have a visit from Tom Price, our expert on the international Jewish scene. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the hosts and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. There were remarkable scenes in Israel this past week as the 20 living Israeli hostages returned home to family and friends. After 2 full years of brutal captivity to the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas, the celebrations were nationwide, and the joy experienced by the hostage families was profound. This has been a time prayed for by Jews all around the world and by many others ever since October 7th, 2023, 2 full years on the Jewish calendar since Simchat Torah 5784. The 20 hostages released seemed to be in basically decent condition, especially considering that they experienced 2 full years of fear, torture, near starvation, and for some, total isolation and solitary confinement, both underground in the Hamas terror tunnels of the Palestinians and above ground held by Palestinians. It is a great day for Israel this week and an incredible relief. For many of us, being able to remove the dog tags, ribbons, bracelets, and other remembrances of the hostages after 2 years is a holy moment. In my own congregation, Beit Simcha, here in Tucson, Arizona, we held Shmini Atzeret and Simcha Torah services without needing to offer prayers for the release of the captive Israelis for the first time in 2 years. It's a period when we should offer prayers of thanksgiving, gratitude, and tremendous relief. We must note that Israel released over 2,000 Palestinian prisoners in exchange for these 20 living hostages. Fully 250 of those Palestinians were serving sentences for having murdered Israelis. The remaining Palestinians released were arrested since the beginning of the Gaza War, but were not, according to Israeli intelligence, involved in the October 7th war crime atrocities themselves. A central condition of this agreement was the restoration of the bodies of the 28 Israelis murdered by the Palestinian terrorists during their captivity in Gaza, whose remains had not yet been returned to Israel for burial. However, just a few bodies have been returned to Israel since the agreement was signed, and the failure of Hamas to identify and return these remains does put the agreement into some question. But there have been some bodies returned, at least, already, and there is hope the remaining murdered Israelis will be restored to Israel for proper burial. There also seems to be some progress towards creating a new Palestinian leadership to take authority in Gaza, one that is not the corrupt Palestinian Authority or the brutal and horrific Islamist Hamas. However, Hamas has already demonstrated that they intend to murder any Palestinians they suspect of challenging their authority in Gaza. These terrorists have lost the war to the Israelis, but they have no apparent intention to allow Gaza to be ruled by any other Palestinians besides their own terrorist selves, and they have publicly murdered some of their Palestinian opponents in the days since the ceasefire agreement was signed and sent it around publicly on social media. I might add, there has been no criticism of Hamas for murdering Palestinians since the end of the Gaza War, coming from those people who have been shouting "Free Palestine" so publicly for 2 years. Somehow, when Palestinians murder other Palestinians, beating them and shooting them in the street, it's okay and appropriate civilized behavior to these folks. You know, I remember a rabbi I worked with long ago saying, the only time an Arab life matters in the West is when it's taken by a Jew. And clearly, not when it's taken by another Arab, including Palestinians murdering Palestinians. Still, before we move on to considering the complex implementation of this new agreement in all of its many permutations, and the many ways it might go wrong, we need to rejoice in the return of the hostages as they start to rebuild their lives in Israel. May they be blessed with the restoration of health and healing and find a country returned to peace, now and always. To play us in this morning, here's Israeli singer Shlomo Artzi's song Melech HaOlam, King of the World, that he sung for the released hostages at Ichilov Hospital in Tel Aviv last week.
Sham betoch mita, mul kir anak kachol, kar vezor, lifamim ata, nenach bli kol, uvchol zot, ima sham shomeret gam kshata gadol, machlifa lecha bgadim, omeret sheata, מלך הגברים בשבילה אתה יכול להיות מה שבא לך לראש מלך החיות או מלך ההרים אם תטפס אישה קום תהיה כל מה שבא לך כי בשבילה אתה תמיד מלך העולם.
That was Shlomo Artzi singing Melech HaOlam, 2 and 4, the released hostages, back in Israel, finally. When we return in a moment on To Jewish, our guest this morning here will be Matt Whitaker, director of the excellent new film Truth and Treason, about the youngest person executed by the Nazis for treason ever, a heroic teenager who sought to elevate truth in a time of autocratic terror. The film Truth and Treason is out now, and you can meet the director when he joins us in just a moment on Too Jewish. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning our guest this morning, Matt Whitaker, is the director of an excellent new film, Truth and Treason. It's about really the execution of the youngest German accused by the Nazi regime of treason during World War II. Fascinating, really. I hope I didn't give away the spoiler here.
We've never buried the lead on that one.
That's good. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. I'm honored to be a part of this.
So tell us a little bit about the origin of the film. This is a story that I wasn't aware of. I know about the White Rose Society, many other efforts to fight the Nazis through publicity and information and truth, as you say in the movie so frequently. But where did this story come from? How did you find out about it?
Back in 2001, I was working on another World War II documentary, and I got word, somebody asked me if I'd ever heard of Helmut Hubner, the 16-year-old in Nazi Germany, who was led a resistance group of other teenagers, and I hadn't. And I found out that the last surviving member of the group, Karl-Heinz Schnibbe, lived not far away from me, and so we just looked him up in the phone book.
Oh my goodness.
His name, called him up and asked if he would share his story with us, and he said, Yashua, come on over. And we went to his home. He shared the short version of his story of his, you know, best friend Helmut Hubner, who had recruited him to join in his efforts to share the truth, to be part of a peaceful resistance movement. And I walked out of Carl's house that day just absolutely sure that I had to find a way to share this story with the world. So I did a documentary for PBS.
PBS documentary, right.
Called Truth and Conviction, and the story still wouldn't let go of me. So with my writing partner, we wrote a script and started the long journey of trying to make a feature film out of this.
You know, I want to be clear, it is a feature film, beautifully acted, beautifully shot, and it really tugs at you. Is it totally faithful to the story? I always have to ask this. You've done the documentary. How close does the feature film run to the facts, the truth, as it were?
Sure. Yeah. No, it's a good question. You know, when I did the documentary, I guess you could say that was my photograph of the story, or my best attempt at a photograph of the story, really trying to just be historically, you know, factual as a documentary filmmaker. This is more my painting of the story. Having said that, it is almost completely factually accurate. Of course, there are places in the story where we don't know some of the details, some places where we have taken certain characters, and is often done when you're converting a historical story into a movie, is combining certain characters or, you know, those kinds of things. But by and large, I couldn't give you a percentage, but by and large, it is factual to history.
It's a remarkable film. We will talk much more with Matt Whitaker, the director of Truth and Treason, terrific new film that's just out now, when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in Catalina Foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall and winter. Established 7 years ago by fabulous congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation, northwest Tucson and the Catalina Foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Religious schools available for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can come to services in person or on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, including our Adult Bar Bat Mitzvah program and Introductory Judaism, are taught live and on Zoom. You can access all of those. Email me if you want, rabbi at BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, our terrific religious school and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is a very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments all help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation.
known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. This week in the Torah, we will be chanting the Torah portion of Noah, second weekly part in Genesis, all about the most famous mariner in all history, a guy who rode out the storm to end all storms in an ark. From a forgotten Broadway show on the theme of Noah, here's a song called 2x2, starring the late Danny Kaye. Actually, the song is called When It Dries. The show is called 2x2. It's all about what happens when you finally get off the ark.
Why are you so gloomy? We're alive and we're afloat. After 40 days and nights, it's shipshape on the boat. Look, the sun's come out again and turned a rosy red. How can you be gloomy when you think of what's ahead? It's gonna be some terrific place when it dries, when it dries. You're gonna see wide and open space when it dries, when it dries. It's gonna be some terrific place. You're gonna see wide and open space. We're gonna have such a human race when it dries. The greenery's gonna have a shine when it dries,
when it dries.
The world'll be full and fat and fine when it dries,
when it dries.
The greenery's gonna have a shine. The world'll be full and fat and fine.
The best thing of all, it's one third fine when it dries.
Half a million growing things will spring up from the ground.
Half a million bodies will be floating all around.
Room to work and grow and build a company of men.
Think about how much we can contaminate again.
There's gonna be air beyond compare when it dries,
when it dries.
With drinkable water everywhere
when it dries, when it dries. There's gonna be air beyond compare with drinkable water everywhere.
As long as you don't have people there when it dries.
When it dries,
when it dries.
When It Dries, from the old musical 2x2, with music by one of the most successful of all Broadway composers, Richard Rodgers. Of course, he was Jewish, and his most famous partners were the Jewish lyricist Lorenz Hart and the descended from, but not raised as a Jew, Oscar Hammerstein. In any case, the great tale of Noah is shared to one degree or another by other ancient books of lore and legend, most notably the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh, another guy who had to build a big boat in order to save humanity. But rather than read to you an ancient Akkadian, as much as I would like to, I rather thought that here on Too Jewish,
the discredited but still very funny Bill Cosby's version of the Noah story might play better.
Very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He was making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. Vuba, 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 vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, vuba, vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood, build it 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits. What's a cubit? Let's see, a cubit. I used to know what a cubit was. Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things? I'm going to destroy the world. Right.
There's just something inherently comic about being stuck on a giant boat with a whole bunch of animals. The great Israeli poet Dan Pagis had a different take on the story of Noah, that of the perspective of the fish. Our Jewish poetry slam today comes from his great poem, Ararat. While all the ark survivors lurched onto land and in joyful disarray chattered and roared and shouted for prey and howled for procreation, and overhead came the rainbow and said, "No such end will happen again." The end did come, for the carefree fish that had lived off the mishap like smooth speculators, now on stiffening soil, they were caught. Their fins disheveled, their mouths gaping wide, they died, drowning in air. That was Israeli poet Dan Pagis' ironic and poignant poem, Ararat, for the Torah portion of Noah that we will read this coming Shabbat. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, I'm going in a few weeks on a rabbi's trip to Azerbaijan and Israel. I've never been in that part of the world. It's a complicated part of the world, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. The Caucasus has three post-Soviet independent states, Armenia, Azerbaijan, and Georgia. And the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan goes way back. It's what is called a frozen conflict, although the American president recently announced that he had made peace there. That's been announced many times over the past 50 years, and it usually lasts a few days. The issue is part of Azerbaijani territory is an enclave that is largely ethnic Armenian.
That's Nagorno-Karabakh we're talking about, right?
Right, Nagorno-Karabakh, exactly. And that is one of the many frozen conflicts around the world that most people don't like to focus on because, you know, if Jews aren't involved, the conflict is less interesting to the world press. And in this case, no Jews are involved at all. Jews didn't live in Nagorno-Karabakh. And in fact, you may recall that I opened the American Embassy in Armenia.
I do recall that.
And, you know, I spent a lot of time in both neighboring capitals, Tbilisi in Georgia and Baku in Azerbaijan. And three cities are very different. Armenia and Georgia are both countries that are almost entirely Christian, and they also have like autocephalous churches, their own hierarchy, their own...
Right, their own patriarchate, their own structure, I understand.
Right. So anyway, and Azerbaijan is largely a Muslim country, although at one point, Baku in particular prided itself on its diversity because there were Russians, Armenians, Jews, there were all kinds of people from all over that part of the world. And ironically, under Soviet rule, they actually lived in harmony together. It was after Soviet Union split apart that all these armed conflicts emerged. But so in terms of Jewish communities, definitely Baku has the largest. Tbilisi still has an active Jewish community with more than one synagogue and a few kosher restaurants. Armenia has virtually no Jews, although when I was there, the president's wife and therefore his son, David, were Jewish.
Huh.
And I asked at one point some friendly, knowledgeable Armenian, like, why are there so few Jews here? Like, every other capital in the former Soviet Union has a Jewish community, has at least a few synagogues of Jewish. Said, well, we didn't need them. The other countries like Turkmenistan, they're savages, and we are civilized. We have the same professions that Jews do, so we didn't really need to import Jews. And there have always been a few Jews there, but it's never been a major community. And it's quite a distinction between Yerevan and Baku and Tbilisi. I mean, they're all very different from each other. I wish you could go to all three.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Learn a lot. And Azerbaijan is particularly close to Israel because Israel sells a lot of arms there. So it's an important market for Israel.
It is peculiar. It's one of the few Muslim countries with full relations with Israel. Tom, I will learn a lot and we'll talk more about it when I get back. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to that.
Speaking as we were earlier on Too Jewish About Rain, it's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Two guys from the town of Chelm went out for a walk. Suddenly it began to rain. Quick, said one of the guys, open your umbrella. It won't help, said his friend. My umbrella is full of holes. So why did you bring it? His friend asked. I didn't think it would rain. You see, Chelm is a town of fools, and never mind. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. It's an old story and we know it well. God sees wickedness and corruption have spread throughout the world. Human beings are acting in ways that should have been predictable to an all-knowing deity. Lying, cheating, stealing, murdering, slandering, smearing political opponents. Slandering in particular immigrants. You know, the usual. In response, God decides to destroy the world in a great flood. Rain falling for 40 days and nights, the whole of humanity drowned in a deluge. Just one man is chosen to survive the flood because, the Torah tells us, he was righteous in his generation. Noah, Noach in Hebrew, is chosen to carry the banner of humanity for the next generation, gathering his family about him and two of each animal plus seven pairs of each kosher animal. So he's got something to eat and something to sacrifice to God if they make it. Noah builds the ark, loads the boat, and goes not on a three-hour cruise, but one long enough to float away every trace of the depravity of humanity. Eventually, he sends out first a raven and then a dove to see if the world is dry enough to land upon. The raven disappears, but the dove brings back that famous olive branch. People disembark the ark, let off the animals, and life begins again. A great covenant is affirmed, the first and most enduring brit in all of human history. God agrees never again to destroy the earth by flood. Unfortunately, we humans don't agree to the same provision and oversight we may pay for soon. but we do agree to abide by certain minimum standards of morality. Truly, a new beginning. In essence, God acknowledges that this new world will not be the Garden of Eden anymore, but it can be both physically and morally good and rich. Noah, we're told, was a righteous man in his generation, Ish Tzadik Bedorotav, which doesn't necessarily make him a righteous man in every generation. The Zohar, the great book of Jewish mysticism, explains that when Noah was told about the destruction of all humanity, he complied with God's command to build the ark and save his family and the animals, but he did not protest the destruction of humanity. Unlike Abraham or Moses, who argue vigorously with God against similar decrees, Noah just goes along with the human destruction divinely decreed. He's good enough, but not exactly good. Perhaps for us this sets a reasonable standard we can live up to. If we can't necessarily succeed in becoming fully righteous for all time, at least we can strive to be righteous in our own turbulent, somewhat degraded times. All that's required is we try to be the best that we personally can be. Seek to do what's right, even when it seems easier to choose not to do that. If we human beings can manage that, be only as good as Noah, well, we too might end up saving the whole world, which now, as then, appears to need a good deal of saving. When we come back in a moment on Two Jewish, our guest, Matt Whitaker, director of the excellent, powerful new film, Truth and Treason, will explain some of the complexity of resisting Nazis for religious reasons and the heroic young men who are the source of this extraordinary new film. Find out all about it when we return in a moment on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world, with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Twenty living Israeli hostages were released by the Hamas Palestinian terrorists who held them captive for 2 full years. The reunions were amazing to watch as family and friends rejoiced on a reunification that was beginning to seem impossible. It was a time of great relief and great joy in Israel. Celebrating the restoration of the hostages to freedom in Israel, U.S. President Donald Trump addressed the Knesset in Jerusalem in person last week, praising Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and saying to Israel, "You've won. You've won everything you could by force of arms. Now it's time to translate these victories against terrorists on the battlefield into the ultimate prize of peace and prosperity for the whole Middle East." Well, so may it prove to be. On the downside, the remains of murdered Israeli and other nationality hostages who died at the hands of their Palestinian captor terrorists have mostly not yet been returned to Israel for burial, in spite of that signed agreement. Hamas is, of course, not a group known for adhering to the terms of a treaty. Israel and the U.S. have insisted that Hamas live up to the terms of the agreement that led to the ceasefire with Israel, and that they return the corpses these Palestinian terrorists have ghoulishly and cruelly held on to at this point. Perhaps even more seriously, the U.S. military warned Hamas to stop its acts of violence in the wake of a video showing 8 people being executed on the street in Gaza by Hamas terrorists after the IDF withdrawal. "We strongly urge Hamas to immediately suspend violence and shooting at innocent Palestinian civilians in Gaza, in both Hamas-held parts of Gaza and those secured by the IDF behind the yellow line," said Admiral Brad Cooper, who heads U.S. Central Command, referring, of course, to IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, the Israeli military. "This is a historic opportunity for peace. Hamas should seize it by fully standing down, strictly adhering to President Trump's 20-point peace plan and disarming without delay," Cooper added. "Hamas has been undertaking a wave of retribution executions and asserting its grasp in areas of Gaza where Israel withdrew, underscoring the challenge facing President Trump to get Hamas to disarm and give up power as part of his 20-point plan for peace that Hamas agreed to." online channels linked to Hamas sent a video in which masked terrorists wearing green Hamas headbands murdered 8 blindfolded people in Gaza City after beating them. The Palestinian terrorist group has murdered at least 33 Palestinians since the ceasefire began just this last week. That's according to Reuters, which added that 8 men were dragged into the Gaza City square and shot. Trump said he expected Hamas to disarm, called for in the peace agreement, and if they didn't, the U.S. would get involved. They're going to disarm because they said they were going to disarm, Trump said, and if they don't disarm, we will disarm them with force if necessary. Videos of Hamas's barbaric reprisal have gone viral on social media. The group clashed with other armed Palestinian clans as it sought to hold control of the Gaza Strip after the U.S. brokered truce. The footage showing that execution, whom the armed group of Hamas, the terrorists, branded collaborators and outlaws. These badly beaten men can be seen blindfolded and kneeling in the street before each one is shot dead by terrorist gunmen wearing the green headbands of Hamas. Chants of Allahu Akbar, God is great, in Arabic, can be heard from the crowd surrounding the bodies. Without providing any evidence, Hamas said the victims were criminals and collaborators with Israel. The show of force, violence, brutality, hatred, terror, welcomed by some Palestinians after months of lawlessness, could threaten the truce now that all the living hostages kidnapped by Hamas on October 7, 2023, have been released. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu has repeatedly said the war will not end until Hamas has been dismantled. U.S. President Donald Trump's ceasefire plan calls for Hamas to disarm and hand power over to an internationally supervised body that has yet to be fully formed. Hamas has not fully accepted those terms, saying more negotiations are needed. It said it is willing to hand over power to other Palestinians, but will not allow, quote-unquote, chaos to prevail during the transition. That's why they're murdering people. Israelis fear that as long as Hamas is armed, they will continue to control Gaza, or at least exercise influence, and will seek to rebuild its military capabilities, even if an independent body exercises nominal official rule. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews from around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Matt Whitaker, is the director of a new film, Truth and Treason, a powerful story focused on not only one teenage boy, but 3 teenage boys, really, and sort of 4. So what catalyzes Helma to become involved in peaceful protest and his friends is when one of their partially Jewish friends is taken away. Now, he attends church with them. Tell us a little bit about sort of the religious aspects of the story.
So Helmut's friend, Zalomon Schwartz, was, as you mentioned, was part Jewish and raised in a Jewish household and converted to Christianity and specifically to Mormonism as a teenager. And he and Helmut were close friends. As you see depicted in the film, the 4 boys were just, you know, teenagers in Nazi Germany, still trying to have fun, still having crushes on girls, all those kinds of things. But it was as the Nazi noose, if you will, began to tighten specifically around, you know, Jews, and Helmut was watching what was happening with his friend Zalomon, which led eventually to his friend being, you know, taken. And that was, as you mentioned, that was the catalyst for Helmut to do something, to stand up.
Obviously, it wasn't a popular decision in his home, ultimately. Tell us about the home that he comes from.
He was raised in a home when he was younger, and we don't cover this in the film, but his mother was divorced. He and his older half-brother were raised by their single mom, and then she remarried a man named Hugo Hubner, who was an officer, in the Nazis. He was a part of the SA, and he and Helmut did not get along well. And so Helmut and his stepfather, Hugo Hübner, did not get along at all. Hugo was an officer in the SA and, very, very committed Nazi. Helmut's living under the same roof with this man and, at night typing up anti-Hitler, anti-Nazi leaflets and sneaking out and putting them out. And the way that, of course, we depicted in the film is that Hugo, his stepfather, discovers the radio, not the leaflets, but the radio, this banned shortwave radio that Helmut had possession of, and is kicked out of his house, goes to live with his grandmother. And that's where he really has the freedom to kind of open up his resistance efforts. His friends, Carl and Rudy, join him there and then begin sneaking into their church, which happened to have a mimeograph machine, and so began making hundreds of copies of these leaflets and really putting them out on the streets of Hamburg at night. The interesting thing about Helmut's relationship with his stepfather is that after Helmut was arrested, it was his stepfather who officially adopted Helmut, gave him his last name, and most historians that know this story see it as an effort from Hugo to help the process, if you will, so that he would have the name of a respected Nazi officer. So the fact that Helmut is known as Helmut Hübner now is because of this effort made by his stepfather, who was a Nazi, but who seemed to have had a change of heart.
The story takes what seems like a bright but kind of ordinary German youth and brings him to a moment where it's not just sort of small acts of rebellion and nonconformity, but realizing that he has to do something. But it's not one moment. It was a process, right?
It was. Yeah, he was, when his older brother, who served in the German army, smuggled home a shortwave radio, and Helmut, who was very curious, snuck and began listening to the BBC broadcast. At that time, the BBC would broadcast in the German language. And, this was a kid who had been essentially raised hearing nothing but propaganda his whole life. All he had access to was what Hitler and Goebbels wanted him to hear, through the People's Radio or through the approved Nazi publications. And suddenly he's turning on, the BBC and hearing things that he immediately recognizes as the truth. It's this objective information that he recognizes as the truth. I've tried to kind of figure out, what the comparison would be for me, and what I think it could be something like as if I were raised only hearing Fox News or MSNBC, one of those throughout my whole life, and then I turn on a radio or a TV and I see Walter Cronkite, and I begin to hear that. I think it's like I could just recognize, here is objective truth when I hear it, and I think that's what it was for Helmut. So getting that information was one of the things. And then, a couple other things were happening at the same time. One is that he was hired to work for the Nazis at the city hall in Hamburg, where he had access to banned literature. They had an archive there where they kept copies of banned books, and he would sneak in there and borrow them and read them, and eventually began, utilizing some of that information in his leaflets. And then, of course, the other thing that happened was when Salomon Schwartz, his Jewish friend, was arrested and taken, and eventually, was murdered at Auschwitz. Those events kind of created the perfect storm for this young 16-year-old to borrow a typewriter from his church. Right. And begin typing these seditious leaflets, and then spreading them, on the streets of Hamburg.
Tell us about the status of the Mormon Church, which I hadn't really thought about. Mormons have been persecuted many places around the world. Tell us about the status of the Mormon Church in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, it was a relatively small population, somewhere I think between 20 and 30,000 Mormons or members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints throughout Nazi Germany. And Helmut was part of a small congregation, what they would call a branch,
right,
of that church. And Carl and, Karlheinz Schnibbe and Rudy Voba, his two best friends and co-collaborators, were all part of this same small congregation. The Nazis looked at Mormons with suspicion. They kind of saw them as an American cult, America was, even, in 41, of course, was the enemy. And so the Gestapo would drop by. I use that in quotations, would drop by church meetings and sit, yeah, in the back and observe. They were keeping files on many different congregations throughout Nazi Germany. Those files just recently were released. It's very interesting to read the notes that they were keeping on the Mormons in Nazi Germany. But there were also a lot of them who really supported Hitler and tried to find similarities, if you will. Hitler didn't smoke and he didn't drink, so they would see that similarity. Hitler instituted, you may be familiar with this, but they would translate as a one-pot Sunday. So once a month, he would encourage people to fast for two meals and then give, the money that they saved from not eating, give it to the poor, which is something very similar that's done, within the Mormon faith. And so the Mormons in Nazi Germany were, some of them, and I would say, a good amount of them were looking at this and trying to find similarities, and some of them really did. Some of them, so Helmut, a religious leader, a man named Arthur Zonder, was a devout member of the faith, was a, by all accounts, and I've talked to a number of people who knew him personally, say he was a wonderful religious leader, and he was also a devout Nazi. And it was he who put, as is depicted in the film, who put a sign on the door outside the church one Sunday.
No Jews allowed.
Jews were not permitted.
Yeah, Jews not permitted. Right.
And of course, they knew that they only had one Jewish, member of their congregation, and that was Zalamon. So that was a key event, for Zalamon. But in Helmut's evolution and becoming a resistance fighter, that was a key moment for him, as he's forced to kind of confront the differences between what he grew up learning about loving our neighbor, and that we should, treat the stranger with love and respect. And plus it was his friend, and seeing that was a real dilemma for him. And again, one of the catalysts for him to begin his resistance efforts.
The film also has a little bit of romance, and then the Nazis, of course, utilizing that. Was that factual? Was that movie stuff?
A little of both. So it's based on fact, and the fact that Helmut did have a girlfriend. We know her name. We know that for years, actually, it started when they were, had a beautiful, innocent crush on each other. And the historical fact is that she lived in his same apartment complex. In the film, I've taken it, and we moved to her, so she works in the same office at City Hall, and we gave her a different name. But there was a girl that he was, he was very interested in, and they had what appears to have been just a wonderfully innocent crush on each other for quite some time. And for me, that really represented the reason that it was important for me to have it in there. That represented what might have been, what should have been,
right,
in the life of this teenager. And of course, he wanted to live. He had aspirations. He fell in love with this girl, and all of these things that should have been in his life, and like so many others, ended abruptly and too shortly.
The interrogator, the Nazi who catches him, finds him, and then has a complex relationship with him, even though he tortures him.
Yes.
Tell us about presenting that. I think it's a very complicated role for the actor in particular.
It really is. And that's something, when I did the documentary back in 2002, we didn't know much of anything about Erwin Meusner. In fact, we didn't even know his first name. All we knew is, his last name was Meusner. And we knew what Carl, the surviving member that I became close friends with, could share with me his first account of what this man was like from his perspective, being interrogated and tortured by him. And that was really it. It was in the years after the documentary, when I was doing research for the film, that we uncovered a lot more information about Erwin Meusner. Found that he was a member of the Gestapo. He did brutal things to people during the day. And then he went home at night, and he was a loving husband and father. And I know that that's hard to say out loud. It's hard to get our heads around, but that was the case. It was something that for me was really surprising, but I've come to learn more, and as I'm sure you're aware of this, but things were really complex and nuanced in Nazi Germany, you know, and I think we can look back at, I think a lot of people look back at that, you know, 80 years ago, kind of see it in black and white, you know, like there were just, you know, the evil Gestapo and the noble and heroic resistance fighters. And those things are both true, but there was, of course, that huge gray area in the middle. And there were people that were living out their lives, people that, you know, we describe now as monsters. And I would say, of course, what they did was monstrous, but they were humans. They were people. And so we really kind of explored that in this character of Erwin Meussner, based on historical fact, but also having to, to flesh out, you know, some of the story that we don't know.
I think of Hannah Arendt's characterization of Eichmann, the banality of evil, but this isn't really banal. It's more complex than that. People in very complicated times who are both really good in some areas and really awful in other areas.
Yeah, that's to your point exactly. For me, it was beyond just the banality of evil. It really was.
I want to thank Matt Whitaker for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The film is called Truth and Treason. Where can people find it?
It opens nationwide on October 17th in theaters across the nation. People can go to, our distributor is Angel Studios, and they can go to angel.com/truth and just enter in their city or their zip code, and it'll tell them the nearest theater where they can find it.
That's a really, really good website to go to, angel.com/truth. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Wow. Wow. I mean, you couldn't have asked for anything more powerful than that. Matt, thank you so much, and really a terrific film, and look forward to what comes next.
Thank you very much, Rabbi. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Otho Eskin, author of the new book, Black Sun Rising. Our playout this morning comes from the incredible 1,000 Israeli musician version of Habaita, sung and played in Caesarea in Israel's ancient amphitheater. Some of the musicians were survivors of the terrible attack of October 7, 2023. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of liberation, of freedom, of justice, of peace.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.